No, I'm the one that's down here first today. Where are you? Where are you?
Coming. Here I come. Oh, brother.
I got down here first today.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
See, what on earth is all that stuff that arrived yesterday afternoon? Oh, that can't be all fishing tackle. You must have bought out the store, dear.
What do you mean, bought out the store? Well, I have a cup of coffee here, and I'll tell you. You know, I've got to admit to you first that it looks like a lot of equipment. It's been lying around the living room for a while here, and when it's lying on the floor, it looks like I'm lying, or something like that. Anyway, I didn't buy all of it, believe me. I borrowed some of it, and some of it I just rented by the day. You know, you can rent some of that stuff by the day.
Oh, sure, sure.
That's
sure.
Right.
And this is the man that was guffing about my outfit, eh? Uh-huh. You're doing all right yourself, you know.
What do you mean? You mean that I was guffing, that I was telling you not to get a lot of equipment? Is that it?
Well, then...
Is that the idea you're trying to get?
Well, I wonder how the poor Indians made out, though. It seems to me I read somewhere that they caught quite a lot of fish with an old piece of leather with a bone hook on the end, and sometimes they just threw a spear and they got awfully big ones.
Well, you know, you've got to have the right kind of food, and maybe the fish are a little more sophisticated nowadays or something like that.
Oh, they must be.
They're particular.
Judging by the bait and tackle you're collecting to take along. Well, of course, my idea of fishing is a line with a bent pin and a worm on the end.
Are you getting personal with me or something
No.
I just wanted to straighten this thing off. But, of course, you know, the old fishing line and the worm on the end. You've been reading too many Huckleberry Finn stories or something like that. It's old kid stuff. You know that, don't you? You know, out there where we're going, down at Coronado Island, you can see the sharks and the big albacore, and you can see these yellowfin tuna, I hope, the big ones.
Well, I hope you're right. But it seems to me you've been hearing some mighty fishy stories.
Well, I haven't been hearing fishy stories. You know, ever since I was a kid, I've been interested in fishing, and I used to watch them down there when I lived in San Pedro, and I picked up a lot of stuff on Fisherman's Wharf. When I was a young fellow, I was dying to be a spotter on one of those tuna purseiners, or clippers, as they call them nowadays. You know, they're purseine boats, and I wanted to be one of those guys that sat up there in the crow's nest, you know, and on top of the mast or the boom.
What's that noise they're always making?
Mola, mola, they're yelling, and we used to yell, riba, riba, you know, that means fish, fish. It's quite an experience. And I always wanted to get. The only trouble was the first time I ever went on one of those things with a purseiner, and we went to Santa Cruz Island, and I was so sick I didn't see either the fish or the way they did it. And then the next time I did all right. You know, it's a very interesting procedure, catching fish.
Yes, I imagine it. I'm going to find out this weekend.
Well, I'm talking about the purseine fishing was where you have a net that's 365 fathoms long, and if I remember correctly, about 30 or 40 fathoms deep, had a cork line on one end and a lead line on the other, and they'd make a big pocket for the fish.
What's a fathom?
A fathom? Mm-hmm. Fathom is approximately 6 feet. It's a fathom. Did you ever hear of 20,000 fathoms?
Yes, but I didn't quite know how big it was. Or how
fathom
long
is
it was.
2 yards.
Is it? That's what I want to know.
In other words, if I tell you it's 365 fathoms, that means 700 yards. That's like 7 football fields.
Well, you know I can't count that fast. And you measure everything by football fields, baseball fields, diamonds, and what have you. There's one question I want to ask you about that. Why do they call a baseball thing, that round thing that they're always running around and they fall over those blocks they stumble over? Why do they call it a diamond, then?
It's not round. The bases themselves, they're shaped like a diamond, if you
notice. They look like they got sacks on them.
They're bags, that's right. They're the bases. You have to have bases, and it's not circular at all. It's merely the way the grass is cut. That makes the circular path, because when a man runs around the bases, he can't run in a straight line like the bases are. He has to make that little turn before he gets to the base, and it gives you the speed to go on to the next base.
Oh, I see.
And that was started many years ago, I think about 112 years ago, to be exact. I think, if I remember correctly, the year that Mr. Cartwright laid out the diamond originally...
Mm-hmm.
It was back in Cooperstown, and the fellow given credit for it is a fellow named Abner Doubleday. Doubleday was supposed to be the man that founded baseball and started it, but he actually called in this man who was a scientist and also a good engineer, and he laid out the baseball diamond. And, you know, everything runs in a cycle of 9 in the world. I don't know whether you realize that.
No, I never knew that. 9 and 90.
So he made the bases 90 feet apart, and the innings 9 innings. And 3 outs, and he kept them in an equation, simple equation. 90, of course, is divisible by 9, and 9 is divisible by 3, which is the number of
strikes and outs
and innings.
Yeah.
Sounds complicated,
too.
Doesn't it?
Oh, it is. Sounds. What do
that
you mean?
That came
sounds?
Right off the cuff, too. You know that, don't you?
Oh, brother. Well, come down to Earth, dear. All I want is a few fish to show the children. That's what I was talking about.
Oh, we're getting back to fish, yes.
Tell me how you're going to get all this stuff into the plane. I thought you said yesterday I could only carry a few pounds, and well, you look like you must have 20 or 30 pounds of
weight. Well, I've worked that out, dear. I've worked it out. I worried about it myself for a little while, but you're going to take the extra 20 or 30 pounds on the train with you and go in the baggage compartment. You know that.
Oh, is that right?
That's right.
Is Admiral Byrd coming along with us? Well, this little weekend trip is really beginning to take on all the aspects of one of his expeditions.
You mean Admiral Byrd?
Mm-hmm.
I tried to get Richard, but he couldn't open the door or something
Is that right? Well, perhaps we should take along a radio transmitting station so we can broadcast at sea.
Why can't I get in? Into my scripts at the studio some of the throwaway lines that I come up with here, or you come up with here? Wouldn't that be sharp? But if you're worried about Byrd and this trip to the sea, I wouldn't bet my brains out if I were you, dreaming up the improbable. If you'll just concentrate on getting up in the morning at 4 o'clock, that's all I'm worried about. And let's be sure that we've got our time schedule right. Would you like me to review what's going to happen or
yes,
anything like
I
that?
Yes, I would.
You're going to get up at 4.
Go on, Sergeant.
You're going to pack the equipment and the breakfast.
Yes, sir.
You're going to get down. Sergeant,
hup, Sergeant. 2, 3, 4. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Do you think the Army training had anything to do with that?
Well, it sounds awful like it this morning, dear. Go on, here we go. I'm ready. Got my pack.
You're going to get all this on the train by 6, right?
Yes, sir.
That's going to give me time to drive over to Burbank or Long Beach. I was going to be down at Long Beach, but I checked the weather, and it looks like it's going to be bad to take out there, and I think I'm going to move the airplane over to Burbank and take out at Burbank.
Yes, sir.
And I want to get over there and take off around 8:15. You got that?
I got it perfectly. I'm just tired already at the thought of it.
You mean with all the routine I've given you, it's worn you out already? It can't wear you out because it's only 22 and a half minutes of 9 o'clock. And this is a beautiful Friday morning. We're taking off in the morning. I'll meet you at the station in San Diego. You'll remember that.
Roger. 0 hour, 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock, Roger. Oh, brother, am I suffering. Now I'm back with my astrology.
I know you're going to love that kind of stuff because, you know, it's the old routine that I had when I was in the Army.
You can have it, dear.
Yeah, they can have it, too. Well, say, how about switching the subject a little bit here and getting a little more into your line? Is that all right?
All right.
What about astrology? Let's kind of cover it quickly and to the point and find out what sign we're talking about and all that.
Well, we're going to talk about Leo.
Oh, you're getting a plug-in for MGM again. Is
yes,
that it?
It's ruled by the sun. And persons born from July 23rd to August the 23rd.
Well, I must keep repeating, Leo means lion, doesn't it?
Yes, and these people are powerful, commanding, and courageous, just like the lion.
They are powerful. In other words, if I run into a fella that is a Leo sign, I would steer clear of him. Is that right?
That's right.
Right? Okay, well, what about the... Do they have jewels, too? Do they have...
Oh, yes.
Stones? What is their best
jewel? Their jewel is the ruby. Lovely color. Whose color is like the flaming red heart of the sun.
I knew a girl named Ruby once.
Well, I think everybody's known a girl named
All
Ruby
right,
once,
go ahead.
Well, it signifies Leo's burning ambition. It also is the color of love, and people of this sign are ardent, generous, and loving. They are constant and faithful in their affections.
Is that
nice,
right? Well, I'd say that was very nice, and now that you got through with the color on it, and also the stars, I'm going to start and talk about quiz. Let's bring it in a little early today. Let's bring it in about 20, 21 minutes of 9. What do you say?
All right.
We'll talk about the quiz, ask a few questions here, and if you'll pass me a little Breakfast Club coffee, you know I haven't mentioned that once this morning.
No, it's very good this morning, too. Olive made it very nicely, but I don't think it's... Olive made it good. I think that the coffee is so good.
It is good.
It's blended so well, isn't it?
You know, I talked to Mike Lyman last Saturday night, and he told me he gave the coffee the name.
He did? Mike Lyman's restaurant where you get all that wonderful good food to eat?
Yes, well, what I like about Lyman's is that... when you take the whole family there, you can get almost any kind of food, and deliciously seasoned and good cooked. good cooks in their kitchen and wonderful service. And when I get that check, that worries me, naturally. When you walk in there with a big family like we've got, you're concerned about the check. And it was very reasonable. I got good food. And everybody seemed well pleased.
Well, it's so nice that you can take us out once in a while and not have to think about it for 4 or 5 weeks afterwards and say, my goodness, we can't go out again now for 3 or 4 weeks because the check was so big.
Well, you know, there are two Lyman's. You know that, don't you?
You've
been down to
the
one on Hill Street.
That's right. That's
and the
right.
one on Vine Street.
Yes, that's right.
Just south of
so
Hollywood
they're close
Boulevard.
To everybody, and you can really hop in there very fast and get your food. It's really a lovely place, and I know that they serve Breakfast Club coffee.
And you find everybody there. It's like the Porch of the Shepherd's Hotel in Cairo. Some sooner or later, everybody goes under these portals or whatever it is. How does that sound?
That sounds like MGM through these portals past the most.
That's not MGM. That's Earl Carroll.
Oh, is it? Well, I
yeah.
know it was one of those places.
But
I didn't
I'll take the ones that pass through the portals of MGM, too, you know.
Oh, they're pretty sure.
Have you seen Miss Turner around the studio lately?
Yes, I saw her the other day. She's a blonde now again, you know.
And looks lovely.
And she looks, always does. I mean,
yes. Why don't we get her on our program some morning?
I'll
will you ask her?
Sure, I will.
All right. If you happen to... If you happen to go on one of these conventions or when you're on location, if you don't want us to record a program some morning, have her come up and take your place, and we'll see how
it
goes.
Oh, I get it. I get it. I think you're pretty bright at that, my dear old
sharp.
Friend. The Army didn't dull your brain at all. That helped 2-3-4 routine you went through.
You think so,
uh-huh.
eh?
It's all right.
All right. I'm going to ask you a question. Is that okay?
Yes, sir.
Now, you heard of the Indians smoking the pipe of peace, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, do you know what it was made of, what the pipe was made of?
Well, probably from a hollow reed or something like that, or maybe a buffalo horn.
No, a buffalo horn. They were made of stone, and here's the thing that even I didn't know. Did you know that I didn't know this?
There's a lot of things you don't know, dear. I keep them quite a secret.
Oh, well, anyway, let's go on from here. The stone came from a special quarry in Minnesota, which was a neutral ground between the tribes. It's like a boundary line, you know,
mm-hmm.
and warfare was forbidden there. And that's
see.
Where they'd come in. The stone was
what,
there, and that's why they call it the Pipe of Peace.
Which is the reason for the name Pipe of Peace?
Right.
Well, that's a really beautiful idea. See, talking of tribes, why do nomads move from place to place? Do you know that?
Well, that's a very simple question for a man who's been around as much as I have to answer. You know, they move from place to place because they find new pastures for their flocks. That's a reasonable answer, and... since they are not agricultural, as nomads are not known to be, they don't plant fresh crops. They just take the crops that are there and move on. And their animals eat all the vegetation in one district. They simply have to move to another district, and that's one of the things. I wonder if you know this about cows, by the way, as long as we're talking about animals eating crops. Do you know whether cows have a full set of teeth?
Well, I suppose they must have. How would they chew?
Just the same. They have no upper teeth, you know.
Cow has no upper teeth.
That's right.
You know something? I never looked in a cow's mouth to find out.
But you can eat chew the same as anybody else with no upper teeth, but they have no upper teeth.
We'd look
you know
very
that?
Peculiar, wouldn't we, chewing with no upper teeth?
But don't you don't we? Chew like that, you know.
Oh.
You must be thinking of something else.
Well, I've got to think of something to catch you out on. Let me think now. I'll see if you know this. What started the custom of clinking glasses together before drinking?
Of doing what?
Clinking glasses together before drinking.
Well, I really don't know. I'm afraid clinking glasses, well, it just sounds like here's mud in your eye or something like that. I don't know.
Well, no. In the old days, men would have a glass of wine together before fighting a duel. And part of each glass was poured into the other in case they were poisoned.
Well, that's good. That's good news. New news to me. Did you like the way I said that, new news?
Yes.
Huh? That's good. You know, I'm kind of surprised and amazed about how much you know about those old customs. And, of course, I can understand you knowing a lot about these European things. But do you know what you just did?
No, what?
You're letting that character who wrote you a letter saying that he thought that you were not English influence you a little bit. Do you know that?
Oh, he told me I should go to England.
No, I just want to tell you what you said a moment ago.
What did I say?
You said each glass and a glass.
Oh.
You know what I mean? You said it naturally, and then you became conscious of it, and then you tried to harden it
we
like
had
we Westerners.
From, from a man, you know, the other day who said that I had a phony English accent and that, that I should go to London and find out how the English really speak. He said that he knew that I'd been in pictures a long time and that I'd been getting away with murder with this phony accent. But he evidently thinks I come from Brooklyn or someplace, I guess. I don't know.
Well,
he doesn't know he's born at Buckingham Gate.
No, and the funny, and you know, the most peculiar part about your way of speaking, everyone that has ever seen you in a picture always mentions that to me. They mention the fact that you have a beautiful voice, and they like the way you talk, and you're not, shall I say, corny with it.
Let me handle
all the corn in the family, will you?
All right, dear. Well, in that case, I think I'll take a ride down to the beach.
Right from corn, you're going down to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
That's
well, what are you going to do down there?
Well, I'm going to see that Barbara wants to join the Ambassador Beach Club, and I promised to go with her.
Barbara? Is she in town?
Yes, she's in.
Oh, I didn't know that. The Ambassador Beach Club, you mean the one at the that we've been talking about, where Pico meets the Pacific?
Uh-huh.
Kind of like that slogan. But they're having a wonderful reception to the fact that we mentioned on the air several times that you can join the Ambassador Beach Club. You know, the Army had the premises down there at the Ambassador Beach Club during the war, and they had only been able to start redecorating the hotel just recently. And I think they're being very fair in making a wonderful price for membership for the summer months, and it lasts until October the 1st. And that's for $60 for the whole family. Is that right there?
Yes. Well, everyone I know is joining. And of course, those buffet dinners are so good when you don't want to be bothered with cooking, or the cook is out, or they're planning all sorts of dances and parties. You can go right down there, and they'll put on a big buffet for you. It's really awfully good.
Say, just for my own benefit, because Shimmy Shimer always asks me what it is, what is that phone number again? Give it to me. I want to give it to a couple of fellas at the studio.
It's Prospect. Got your pencil?
Yes.
Prospect 5128.
That's
and
it.
And I also want to give it to a couple of the fellas at the studio so that they can...
That's PR Prospect.
Prospect 5128.
5128. Well, that's easy to remember. You know why? Because 5128, you can remember that, can't you?
Oh, sure.
And if that's not an easy way to remember it, then you take the 8... And you
we
add the other three numbers, 5, 1, and 2, and that gives you a total sum of 8.
But, dear, we went all through that with the...
Now, if you add the first two numbers together, 5 and 1, that's 6.
Yes.
And then add the third one to it, that's 8, and that gives you the last number, which is 8.
And then we write a lyric.
You follow me?
Uh-huh.
Now, if you take the last number and subtract the next to the last number, which is 2,
yeah,
that leaves you 6, which is the sum total of the first two numbers, 5, 1.
I'm going insane.
5, 1, 2, 8.
I'm gradually going insane.
Who's on first base?
I'm going mad. Olive, a cup of coffee, please, for Mr. Frankovich.
You mean Breakfast Club coffee cures everything, is that right?
My goodness me.
Well, what about sunbathing down at the beach?
Oh, it's a very good time to start sunbathing. You know, that way you can get a good tan without getting red and blistering. And, well, the sun isn't so hot in May as it is later on in the year. In fact, sometimes it's really quite cloudy at the beach in the morning. You know, of course, I go anyway because the rays of the sun will tan even through the clouds, and you don't notice it. I wish there was some way we could tell for certain what the weather would be like, don't you?
Well, you can't tell. You can't tell. Like, for instance, here we are still starting a new weekend, and last weekend I prophesied that it was going to be nice and sunny, and it had to wait until Sunday to almost made me a prevaricator or a fibber. But when they got around to Sunday, the sun came out last Sunday, if you'll remember.
Mm.
However, I'm not going to try to guess. I read an article the other day that says weather control is definitely nearly here. In other words, it's almost here, and you may not know it, but scientists are working all the time. They've been working for a long time to try to prevent snowfalls over cities. They're going to control the weather. They're going to avert thunderstorms. They're going to dispel fogs, and that would be a real deal, you know, when you're driving down to Long Beach or someplace in the fog. They're going to detour hurricanes. Remember the hurricane you were in down in Miami?
Yes.
And if they can dissipate these forces harmlessly, they've really got something, I'd say.
Oh, and how? It sounds like heaven. But do you think that they will ever be able to do this?
Mm-hmm. Well, I swallow this coffee. They've done quite a lot already, you know. Weather control has made news recently all over. For instance, Vincent Schaefer started a snowstorm. I think it was up in Massachusetts, and It was on a mountain up there, and he tossed these dry ice pellets. Didn't you remember reading about that?
Yeah.
He tossed the ice pellets into the cloud from a high-flying plane, and it brought down a snowstorm. And there have been other scientists who have artificially induced rain by similar methods.
Oh, I don't see how it helps to make snow and rain. I thought we wanted to avoid that sort of thing.
Oh, that's not right. That's not right. Not always. You remember that there are dry areas. They want rain, the drought areas in the Midwest, and sometimes farmers want them, too. We've wanted them out here. Sometimes we've had rainless early springs, and the citrus growers out here want rain the worst way. Another way in which this would be useful, of course, is to make thunderclouds, and they release their moisture as soon as possible, so that the rains, instead of coming in with hails and heavy rains, they'd be light rains, and they'd be conducive to a better crop. And they could force snow clouds to release their loads, really, before they ever got over the city or the...
Yes, but how could they divert hurricanes, dear?
Well, that can be done, too. You know what causes a hurricane, by chance?
Well,
You've been in one, haven't you?
Yes, but I don't really know. It was pretty sad, the one I was in. I was petrified.
Well, you know that a hurricane is in a rotary motion. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
A circular rotary motion, and it's... Forward motion depends on the prevailing winds. In other words, when you see it spinning, if the wind comes from the northeast, then you're going to get a southwest movement of the hurricane and so forth. Well, scientists have thought of burning oil on the ocean, and they put it right in the path of the hurricane. And they believe that by this heat rising, you know how heat rises. I'm not trying to get too technical. I'm trying to keep it down in the vernacular. No, not in your level, dear, so that I can understand it when I'm explaining it. I'm trying to understand it myself. Anyway, if they burn this oil, put it over the water and burn this oil, the heat naturally will rise. Is that right?
Yes.
And when the heat rises, the fire is going to cause an updraft with the air or the winds. And when the hurricane comes back, it's got to rise. And when it goes higher and higher and gets above the ground level, it'll dissipate itself. And there'll be no damage.
Well, it sounds like a practical idea, but... Can they get enough warning of the hurricane's approach in order to get all this maneuvering and stuff ready in time?
Oh, sure. Don't you remember when we were down in Miami at the termination of the war there, where we knew a day and a half ahead that which way it was moving approximately?
Yes, that's right.
And everybody boarded up the windows? Well, you know, they have a plan, and they've also installed electronic supercalculators, and they receive worldwide weather reports from stations all over the world, and they analyze them, and they report back almost at once with a picture of the future weather movements. And it's really getting modern and scientific and down to a point.
Well, the next few years we'll really see some amazing leaps ahead in scientific things. I'm glad I live in these days to see it all. Well, enough of this deep stuff, off the future. I must delve into the past and think of my great-grandmother.
Your great-grandmother going to get into this?
Yeah, she always gets into these things.
You mean she's going to come in now at 9:07?
Yeah, she's got a recipe. It seems that in those days, when great-grandmother was alive, there weren't so many dentists around. Also, you could just walk into a drugstore and buy all the different brands of... You couldn't just walk into a drugstore, is what I meant, and buy all the different brands of toothpaste and mouthwashes.
No, but did you make these in your kitchen, or did they make them in their kitchen, or what? Well, how'd they get all that?
Well, I guess so, because here's what great-grandmother says.
Oh, yes. What does she say, by all means?
For preserving the teeth, few things are better than a glass of water in which 1/3 teaspoonful of bicarbonate of soda has been dissolved. And you brush the teeth with this solution.
Well, that's a very simple solution, and I'm sure a lot of people have used it. As a matter of fact, I find the best thing for my teeth are salt with... bicarbonate of soda. I've tried
that. Yeah, that's a
good one. Anyone could do it. I think I'll try it myself, as a matter of fact. Don't you think it's a good idea, or do you?
Yeah, I think it's good.
Your grandma says so. It does everything, in other words. Say, why don't you make a batch of this solution and in your spare time?
A spare time?
That's what I said.
What spare time? Now, dear, don't get any ideas into your head. I know all men secretly love the idea of the little woman staying at home, busily canning and preserving and making all these things.
No, that's not true.
I bet you'd even like to see me weave your cloth for your suits and gather herbs to make my own medicines. But remember...
Take it easy.
Today we have careers and we go out to business. We simply cannot do it.
Okay, dear. I love you just the way you are. Now, are there any more beauty hints for the women, for instance?
Oh, yes, here's something on the care of hens. It says to rub a lemon over them to whiten the skin. And lemon juice will also take away the odor of garlic if you have been cooking with it.
What was that to take away the odor of garlic?
Lemon juice.
Lemon juice. What do? Rub it on your hand?
Uh-huh.
Or you drink it?
Well, I guess if you've had some, if you drink a little, it's all
right.
Yeah, all right. Now, that's enough for the women. What are you going to talk about for the men today?
Well, I'm going to talk about something that we haven't discussed very much here, and that's the California State Legislature. Sounds like a dull subject to start right off to most people, doesn't it?
No,
but it
I
isn't.
Think it's
you know, the American citizen, the American public, they get the wrong idea about their state legislature, and it burns me sometimes to a crisp because they look upon their state legislature as kind of a second hand or the second team of the law-making body. And, of course, they think that only minor questions are taken up and unimportant subjects, and you always think of the fellows that get all the publicity in Washington, the big congressmen and the senators and all that. But it's not so. Believe me, it isn't.
Well, what is it, then? I would really like to know myself, and this is a good time to talk about it, since they are now in session, making many laws that will affect all of us.
Yes, that's right. They are in session. You see, the government of America, as everybody read in Lincoln's Gettysburg Address and every place else, is of the people, by the people, and for the people. And the citizen really wants to control himself and govern himself, then he should, and it's his responsibility to take more interest in the state legislature. Because this is really the outfit or the body that makes the greater number of laws that concern us. They concern us immediately with our social privileges and with our political privileges and everything. And it makes most of the rules that govern his daily movements, that your daily movements and mine too.
Well, tell me one thing, dear. Can a citizen really help make the laws? I should think he had no say in the matter and that the politicians all get together and cook them up.
Well, everybody thinks that, but it's really a citizen's own fault if he's too lazy to get a hold of his congressman or his state representative, the state senator, and all that. You got to get together with him. If you think a certain law should be taken over or enacted upon, then wire your congressman or state senator or assemblyman and get a hold of him. The more voices, the more powerful it'll be.
Well, does that mean you can get it passed yourself?
No, of course it doesn't mean you'll get it passed, but you'll get it before the public because, after all, we've got what we call a democratic form of government, and the laws are designed naturally to be of general benefit, we hope, and I'd like to go into great detail about this thing, but, of course, it'd only be boring to some people, and the times are running out because we haven't got a great deal of time left to talk about this thing, but I will take it up. I'll take it up tomorrow. I'm going to tell you about a man who was an assemblyman in the state assembly, and he wanted to eliminate all red color in the streets. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, all the red neon signs, the red paint, etc. And the reason he wanted to do it is he said there was so much red around that one hardly noticed the red stop signal for danger. And he had a pretty good point, but of course I'll have to take that up Monday. I said tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be out. I hope, looking for the big ones.
Oh, brother.
If you know what I mean.
I'm scared
now, I hope you're in good shape.
Going on.
Because we have to get off. Remember, we come to breakfast with you each morning, Monday through Friday, between 8:30 and 9, and my charming wife will close this part of the show. In the meantime, I'm going to scram a roof.
Well, that gives me my thought for today. If you don't put it down, you can't pick it up. Goodbye now. This is Benny.
And this is Mike.
We hope that you've enjoyed this recording, and for more happy listening, please visit otrcat.com.